From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 15th day of July, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Happy birthday to my twins, Megan and Jared, and to Bradley, their younger sibling, whose birthday was late last week and who came back from Texas to run and compete and complete an Ironman in Muncie, Indiana on Saturday. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets here on the Closing Market Report with Kurt from agmarket.net, discuss a broader perspective of last Friday's WASD with Ben Brown at the University of Missouri, and the weather forecast too, that with Mark Russo at Everstream Analytics.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Kurt Kimmel now joins us from agmarket.net. He's in Normal, Illinois, and he and I are talking early over the noon hour today because I'm on my way to St. Louis for an NAFB, National Association of Farm Broadcasting Summer Agribusiness Meeting at the Danforth Plant Sciences Center there tonight. Thank you, Kurt, for rearranging your schedule for me. Although it's an ugly day in Chicago at this point, roughly speaking, over the noon hour, beans are down 20, corn's down 8 to 9 cents, and wheat's off, what, 16 to 17. Is this just a continuation of the World Ag Supply Demand Estimate figures that were released on Friday and the tone that it set, particularly for soybeans, or something else taking place?
Well, I think it's just a combination of all of the above. On last week's report, to give you an idea how negative the market sentiment is, if you look at the old crop corn ending stocks, 1877, well, that's the lowest number we've had for the whole marketing year. If you go back to a year ago in the growing season, we had corn carryout 2.2, 2.1, stocks-to-use ratio over 15%. Well, last Friday there, it showed as much tighter and stocks use ratio at 12%, but corn's 80 cents off those highs we had over a year ago. And so we just got a negative sentiment. You know, back in the day, whenever you had tighter supplies, the market would go up. Just overwhelming looking at the availability of old crop supplies, looking at the end users pretty well, fairly well priced up here for the next 30 to 45 days. And then two, just uncertainty on the bean demand. We saw the shipments this morning here. We shipped out 168 million metric tons of beans. That's below trade expectations. Over a million metric tons of corn. That's at the upper end. Wheat shipments over 500,000 tons. So just the fact that the beans are struggling due to uncertainty of the demand outlook, particularly from Asia. Politically speaking, the events over the weekend maybe strengthened the Republican side of gaining the White House, and therefore more talk of maybe trade issues as we move down the road. A lot of uncertainty there, and that's kind of negative. But front and center, weather-wise, some decent showers, rain activity over the weekend, some more moisture coming at us. Not so fair in the northern part of Illinois here. Producers were dealing with some strong winds, some tornadic event. So there's some corn leaning and some corn that said it was steamrolled. So we'll hopefully keep that isolated and not spread. Some more moisture in the forecast as we move forward. This afternoon's crop conditions report expected to show corn 69% good to excellent versus 68% last week. 57% a year ago. Soybean, same thing, 69% good to excellent, 68% last week, and 55% a year ago. In wheat harvest, 74% complete. So those will be out this afternoon at 3 o'clock. I don't know if it's going to be a huge market issue. But the key today, Todd, is we got to watch this corn chart. A key price reversal to the upside. Did not close as strong as what people anticipated there Friday. But boy, out of the shoot last night until today, corn's been a dog. So a move below last week's low is going to be fairly negative.
Anything in the charts for soybeans that you're concerned about?
Well, zero. I think it's a downside target. Gosh, That's painful if we still have some beans to sell. This morning's crush report came in disappointing at 175.5 million bushels. They were looking more towards 178, still above a year ago. Bean oil stocks, 162, a little tighter than expected. But right now, the soybean chart basis, the front end here, is telling us maybe 1050. See if we can't stabilize there. But it's awful hard to catch a falling knife.
It's off, what, nearly $2 since the beginning of May. Not quite that much, but pretty darn close, around 90 cents, I guess, for the November contract. I think that's what I'm looking at. Yeah, it is. So this has been rough fall, and might be a rough fall for farmers as they move towards that. Any final set of advice for them this week as they think about new crop?
Yeah, well, surprisingly, there's still a little crop around here to hear. We're approaching crop insurance levels on the downside here. We'll be looking at defending that. For those, it's very uneasy. The stop the bleeding, move the cash. There's strong basis on old crop in some areas. And replace for call. New crop white base is still wide, but if you move the cash, you can replace it on paper for call option. You're locked in. You know where you are value-wise. Then if all this weather's adverse and hot and dry, or we get an early frost freeze in October, you've got some re-ownership on to capture it that way. But it's becoming a money management game. It's becoming more and more serious every day that we go down.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
You bet. Take care, Todd.
You too. That's Kirk Kimmel. He is with AgMarket.net. We're now joined by Ben Brown from University of Missouri, Extension there, and FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. Hi, Ben. Thank you for being with us today. I'd like to go back through the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates released Friday morning last week, some of the changes there. I don't know whether you want to start with wheat or not, but those numbers were pretty extraordinary, especially that 80-cent change in the season's average cash price for the crop that just came in to the bin or still in the process in some places. Can you tell me a little bit about the figures that you saw and what you thought of them?
Yeah, absolutely. So that price change in wheat is, at least in my knowledge, the largest single month-on-month change we've seen in price, especially in July. I went back as far as I had time for, right? Like I kept going back just to see if we'd had a bigger month-on-month change and couldn't find one. So, you know, that's pretty stark. And really, it was the production numbers there that I think really stood out. You know, almost 100 and let's just say 135 million bushel increase in production for, you know, all wheat. It was, you know, led by spring wheat production numbers that came in higher than maybe anticipated. And so I think it continues to be that there's a lot of wheat out there. Wheat has an interesting demand story that maybe is unfolding with some challenges in the Black Sea region again due to dryness, maybe some dryness in the French wheat crop. And so, you know, I can kind of make a story of how, you know, extra wheat exports are going to find their way into the U.S. market later in the year. You know, maybe let's just say 4 to 6 months from now, we might see some added wheat exports just because there's need for it, given these supply challenges around the globe. But at least in the current moment, you know, there's enough production here in the United States to satisfy the market, and that's driving the price lower. And that's really spilling over. You know, we saw a big decline on Friday, and it's really spilling over again here to Monday. And the wheat market's kind of pulling everything else down with it a little bit. So continued deterioration in wheat prices is kind of the deterioration due to excess supply is kind of the story there in the wheat complex.
I guess your experience from your own farm, the family farm there in Missouri, about an hour south of Kansas City, we talked to you while you were in the field last month, would suggest there's just a lot of wheat here in the United
sure.
States.
Yeah, the last 2 years we've sold our wheat across the scale, and you know, it paid off for us last year, and you know, at the time I told Dad, I said, there's just a lot of wheat out there. And he kind of agreed, and we sold across the scale. And at least for the current point, that seems to be paying off for us. So
good for you. That always
makes... Still not making money in wheat. We're still not making money, but, you know, that's the way it goes sometimes.
Dad was glad to have an agricultural economist.
for once in his life, right?
Okay, the other numbers, soybeans and corn. Start where you want to.
Oh, well, there wasn't a whole lot of change on the soybean side. I think the picture here for soybeans is, you know, the crop is adequately supplying our needs. I think there is concern on the export front, given the very, very small book of new crop soybean sales that we have to date compared to historical where we normally are this year for, you know, export sales in the new marketing year. So I think that's a little bit of concern on the demand side, and there's, you know, enough soybeans to really kind of supply not only the U.S. market, but the global market at the current point. I think we're still a little bit early in the soybean kind of production year, if you will. There's, you know, going to be a lot of attention on that soybean crop when we get into August, looking at pod fill and stuff like that. So I think there's still some, let me put it this way. I think the soybean crop is not finalized by any means, right? There's still a long ways to go. And so not a lot of changes on the soybean side. Incorporated the acreage and some of the stocks numbers we saw last month. The big news, or, you know, outside the wheat numbers, I think the second big thing for the month was on the corn side. USDA kind of at first glance, I wasn't sure I was looking at the right month. And then after I kept digging, I was like, nope, I'm looking at the right month. And here's what they did. You know, we had a pretty bearish grain stocks report at the end of June. So June 1 grain stocks report that came out there the last day of June was bearish to the corn market. It showed, you know, more acres than what we were anticipating. And it showed more corn on hand, or at least in farmers' hands and elevators across the country as of June 1. You know, the acreage numbers are pretty cut and dry. They got incorporated. That's what we'll work with until we get FSA numbers here in August. However, the stocks numbers were kind of interesting. When you see an increase in grain stocks on hand relative to expectations, that tends to mean two things. That means either, or one of two things, or both. It tends to either mean that last year's crop was actually bigger than what was expected, which I think even a lot of producers are, you know, even a little bit skeptical of the record corn yield that's already printed. So the fact that it could actually even be bigger than that, I think, has some speculation. And so, or doubt. And then the other area, or the other option, is that we didn't use as much feed, or we had lower feed use during the quarter. And so that was kind of, given that people are already skeptical of the last year's corn yield, you know, the expectation was that we'd see a pretty stark reduction in feed use for the old crop marketing year. And that's not what we got. We got a 75 million bushel increase in old crop feed use. And of course, you know, we also had a 75 million bushel increase in exports for 23-24 marketing year, which, you know, I do think we had, you know, USDA needed to move their export number higher. I don't know if 75 million bushels is, you know, fully justified, maybe 50 million bushels, but we're splitting hairs at that point. So like the export numbers, I can get behind. It's the feed and residual use number that I'm still kind of scratching my head a little bit on, of how we could have so many bushels of corn on hand as of June 1 and increase our feed and residual use 75 million bushels. So we'll see what happens. USDA gets to get a chance to revise last year's corn production number in September. We'll see if that happens. But certainly I think, certainly that helped put a bullish tint to the corn market. More use, more demand out there than what was anticipated. That overshadowed the increase in production due to the increase in acres. And that was a little bit of a bullish spark. Now the market is pretty unimpressed, I guess is what I would say. Market rallied a little bit after the report on Friday, finishing a little bit of, you know, higher on the day, but we're back lower again here on Monday. So again, beneficial rains. The market seems to be trading production and perspective on production, but you know, we're in better shape now than we were last week in terms of maybe getting a little bit higher prices.
Just for clarification's sake, the 75 million bushels increase in exports in old crop, correct, for corn?
75 million bushel increase in old crop export numbers.
And the 75 million bushel change for feed and residual you were talking about?
In the old crop, yeah. So that amounted to 150 million bushels of demand in the old crop marketing year that we, and when I say we, I'm going to say, you know, market analyst. I don't know if, I guess I kind of get to be put in the market analyst division, but you know, 150 million bushels that was not anticipated. And of course that helped absorb some of the blow of increased production in the current marketing year, or in the 24-25 marketing year.
Yeah, so that's where we see the 145 million bushel decrease in the beginning stocks number for the current year, which is what most people will see on the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate, because it doesn't actually show, at least in the...
Old crop side, yep.
Yeah, it doesn't show the old crop side. You have to go dig those out.
Yeah.
But there's also a 75 million bushel increase for the coming year in feed and residual number, and 25 million bushels for exports.
Yeah, so 100 million bushels of increased demand in the new crop marketing year. And I, you know, the forecast for the new marketing year on demand are largely based on, you know, the old crop. So if you increase feed and residual use in the you know, the current year, that creates a little bit of a optimistic outlook, I guess, in the, you know, in the next marketing year for what we're going to use for feed and residual use. So, you know, that, I guess what I just said, that 10 seconds right there, I think really signifies how big that change on Friday was, that surprise of increase in feed and residual use. It didn't just have an impact in the old crop marketing year, but it also impacted, you know, demand in the new crop marketing year, at least in terms of how USDA does these things, or, you know, does these balance sheet analysis. But, you know, I don't think it changes the sentiment that we have enough corn out there, at least at the current acreage and yield numbers. Of course, those are going to be debated for another month and a half until we get some FSA numbers, and producers start looking at, you know, what was reported, and analysts start collaborating everything across, or, you know, calibrating everything across. But, you know, there's question of the yield out there. There's still question of the acreage. And so, what this increase in demand for the old crop and even the new crop has done is it hasn't changed the underlying story, but has now created the opportunity that if we see a weather scare, we could see, you know, pretty, I'm going to call it a 50 to 70 cent rally in the corn market, right? Like that's, you know, if a weather event were to transpire, this has allowed the market some breathing room to move higher.
Hey, thank you, Ben. Ben Brown is an agricultural economist with the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute at the University of Missouri and with Extension. Mark Russo from Everstream Analytics now joins us to discuss the agricultural weather forecast for the global growing regions. Hi, Mark. Thanks for being with us. Here in the United States, there was a lot of discussion early on about the wet weather conditions and the issues that created in parts of the northwestern Corn Belt and the impact on yield there. And then, of course, dry conditions east of the Mississippi and the impact of the weather on yield for corn and soybeans there. And now things have changed, and still the discussion is on the impact of yield, but it's to the other direction now. What a change it's been over this month of July. Can you tell me a little bit about that and what things look like in your assessment?
Sure, Todd. Well, the situation right now is that across much of the Midwest, conditions are generally favorable. And again, things have changed just in the past couple of weeks with the previous extremely wet weather, some of the flooding in the northwestern belt and the drier trends in the eastern belt. That has begun to switch around. We've seen improvement in rains, including some of the remnants of Hurricane Beryl move into the eastern Midwest. And then in recent days, these thunderstorm complexes providing rains for the eastern belt. And then the northwestern belt has trended drier. And at least from a rainfall standpoint coming up, we're actually seeing after the next couple of days, actually much of the Midwest shifting into a drier mode. There still will be some thunderstorm complexes in portions of the eastern half or so of the belt here on Monday on into Tuesday. But after that, things look drier and, you know, quite dry across a majority of the Midwest. That's not a problem right now since, again, soil moisture levels are generally favorable. But the longevity is something to monitor if it begins to persist into August. And then lastly, from a temperature standpoint, especially with an emphasis on heat during corn pollination, no significant or long-term heat stress is expected. There's some brief heat, such as what we're seeing right now in portions of the western Midwest, but cooler weather will follow, and basically from now through the end of the month, we're not seeing any extreme or detrimental heat risk.
Last week, we were concerned, I think many of the meteorologists were, that the really warm temperatures, the hot temperatures in parts of California would slide northward and then back through the northwestern corn belt. I take it that's changed?
Well, the northwestern belt has been involved a little bit, but the main heat has been focused further west in the areas of the spring wheat belt of the northern plains, portions of the high plains in the central plains region, and then up into Canada. The canola and spring wheat areas there are now beginning to be influenced by this extreme and, in some cases, record-setting heat across western North America in general. But even with that, that northwestern part of the belt, a little bit on the fringe, but again, the most extreme heat staying out for the time being.
By the time we get to the first part of August, do you expect things to change very much?
Great question here, Todd. At least from a high-level standpoint, we think that there remains some risk of heat and dryness persisting into August, especially from a dryness standpoint. But as we've seen so far, at least, you know, the heat has been absent. And generally, what happens in July tends to follow into the early portion of August. So that is at least something that would likely keep things out. But then there are some longer-term computer models that suggest that that heat might begin to move back in here. So a bit of a mixed signal here looking out into the start of next month.
In the Northern Hemisphere, the one region that we have been watching all year long that has not changed very much, though it's gotten better from time to time, is the Black Sea. They've got some real heat at this point.
Yeah, especially now in areas of southeastern Europe like Romania, Hungary, Bulgaria. You know, those areas are now seeing historic heat. That accounts for about a third of total EU corn production there. And a lot of temperatures actually are record-setting across those areas, as well as into Ukraine, southern Russia too. We see this heat wave continue for another 3 to 4 days across the region before things kind of ease a little bit, but still staying warmer than normal. So bottom line here is that the Black Sea region will continue to see stressful heat as well as a lack of rainfall. So summer crops are having significant issues in those areas with no sign of any improvement here through the end of the month.
Any problems in India or China we should be aware of?
No, those are areas where weather conditions have been and will continue to be favorable. That's true in the North China Plain and Manchuria, corn and soybean belts in China, and then also for the main soybean and other summer crop areas in central and northern India.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online on demand whenever you'd like to hear us at willag.org, willag.org. Just click and play the Closing Market Report right there from the website, or you can hit the podcast tab and subscribe, or just search out the Closing Market Report in your favorite podcast applications, places like Apple and Spotify. You can also listen to us on Amazon Music, in Audible, and so many other places. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it very much. You have a great afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.